Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Jaeger CPA Review and More. This podcast is sponsored by Jaeger CPA Review, the course provider that deals only with the AICPA blueprints. Please go to the JaegerCPAReview.com website and look at our various products. And we believe in seeing is believing. And therefore, please look at our 3-day free trial. Pick a subject, and it'll give you 3 days free access, unlimited, to that product. And I believe that once you look at that product and see how it works, you will pick Jaeger CPA Review as your course provider. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 301-874-4900. If you press 5, you may even talk to Phil Jaeger. Take care, everyone, on your journey for the CPA exam. We wish you the best and good luck.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Jaeger CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Jaeger.
Was the forensic accounting exam, was it very hard? How did you find it compared to the CPA exam?
I thought it was easier than the CPA. I thought the CPA was harder. To me, it's much easier to get some of those extra certifications once you have a CPA. They pretty much use the CPA as the, hey, you have a CPA, you've already gone through the ringer, you've already done the test, if you will. And so they usually give you less requirements to go get those extra credentials. Wow.
But I would think they're having trouble getting people in forensic accounting because they're having trouble getting CPAs.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole talent shortage in general. So there's that. Forensics is sometimes one of those ones that's perceived to be cooler. So sometimes that can help a little bit.
I know this is not your area that I'm going to ask you a question on, but I'm just curious. And I discuss this with you a few minutes. There is a shortage of people taking the CPA exam. All right? You are aware of that, okay?
Yes.
Do you have any idea why that might be? And if you did, all right, what is wrong? Why are not, when I took the exam, it was 2,500 people in Baltimore, all right? And God, everyone, you got out of college and took the CPA exam, all right?
Yeah.
Now, today, they are getting out of college, but there's no rush to take the CPA.
So to me, this is a problem related to how particularly our profession has innovated or lack thereof in certain cases. You know, Rice has done some work on this, and, the MAC program struggles to get candidates as compared to MBA-style programs or business undergrad or something like that. And the reason is if you look at some of the starting accounting salaries versus some of the other starting salaries that are coming out of a B school, even undergrad, you're just not getting your same bang for buck for the amount of education. You just aren't getting the same starting salaries. Now, you accelerate pretty quickly, and you have a lot of optionality toward the middle to end of your career. Like, there's a ton of options, and you kind of make it all back up. But those early stage, markers of, is this valuable because I need to have a job now and I need to know what I'm getting now? Because honestly, most students do not have the data set, like the information to know how fast their career trajectory can be and the optionality of getting a degree that allows you or getting a license that allows you to do so many different things versus kind of pigeonholing you to be overly specific. So, for example, my husband has always lamented that his license makes him extremely narrow scope and specific versus a license that opens up doors and to do more things versus being overly prescriptive and narrow scope. So to me, it's the firms needing, and the profession in general, needing to get those starting salaries up. And it's they get the starting salaries up by not having first year staff that are like either CPA eligible or CPAs do exactly what you said, confirmations. Why was I stuffing envelopes with a CPA? That is not a task that a CPA needs to do. I don't have to be a CPA to stuff an envelope. And so now there's, you know, I'll use a vendor name. There's confirmations.com that in most cases, you don't even need to stuff an envelope and don't need a mail. You do it digitally. And so there's software out there that also helps automate and leverage and facilitate some of those manual steps that need to be done. Once you change the model of how the work is done and you change the CPA eligible or the CPAs to be those high thought people that are analyzing the information that are coming out of systems and kind of the curators of information rather than the creators of information, that's when the model can change. You can get the starting salaries up because you're not making them lackeys of like just doing copies type stuff. And then that makes it more attractive. It's to me, it's a financial situation because the profession has been very scared of some of the new technology because of, and sometimes it's because the regulation system highly regulates our profession and people are afraid to innovate because, ooh, am I going to upset a regulator because I did something in a new way? And I think when the loss, honestly, COVID has become the pivot point for people to realize you can innovate and you pretty much have to. And I'm seeing a pretty drastic change before and after. So I'm really hoping that, you know, there's something that's a benefit of this talent shortage that we're in right now that people realize that we need to change the model.
But, and I agree with you because I had spoken to a lot of CPAs who they sold their practices and they started learning about the PPP loans and they became experts in that. And they started making a lot more money and they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Now,
I was on our PPP team. I enjoyed helping people when I was in public. I will say it was a lot of stress of the unknown. It was extremely stressful.
I know, they changed it every day.
And you know what? That's got to be what our clients are feeling like. Like our non-CPA clients that are always kind of like in the dark about what's happening. And they turn to us for help. And we're like, I'm like, I'm just as in the dark as you are. And trying to anticipate that, you know, to me, that's probably what a regular person feels like on most of this financial stuff. So it gave me a lot of insights into how do I need to kind of communicate so that other people don't feel like they're in the dark and feel like they have some control? Because when you're that in the dark, you don't feel like you're in control.
You know, you said that, you know, first of all, we have 5 years of education, right? CPA, all right?
Yep.
You can go 4 years and you can become an IT, all right? And your starting salary is higher, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I don't know when the person who takes the CPA exam, all right, how long does it take for them to catch up for the differential? Do you have any idea?
I haven't actually done any research on that. I know the Rice Mac program did some research on at least in the business school world, but it's very similar to the IT world in that concept.
And they're starting this evolution January 1st, 2024, all right, just around the corner. Mm-hmm. And first of all, it sounds really good that, you know, we want to keep this profession current. Now you can specialize in other areas. All right. You take a core exam, you can specialize in other areas. All right. But, all right, the experience requirement remains the same. Now, the big problem is people don't want to go into public accounting. All right. They just don't want to do it. The people coming out of school, they don't want to work 60, 70 hours a week. All right. They want to have, you know, they're 9 to 5. They want some, you know, quality of life. So they look at public accounting and they say, you know, we work all these extra hours. All right. And we don't even get paid for them. And then the firms say, oh, yeah, well, we're including that in your annual salary. All right. But the thing is, all these firms, they are making that money for the extra time, and they're not giving anything to a lot of the employees. And that's not really good. And what's happening is there is a gentleman in New York, I'm not going to mention names, who's at the examination division, and he thinks the CPA is just a license to do public accounting. So he's, you know, it's showing this guise of, well, you know, we believe you can go into compliance this, compliance that. So you don't have to just be in public accounting. But bottom line is, hey, that's great. You still have to get public accounting experience. All right. Wake up. And I'll tell you another thing. All right. You know who determines whether this is going to go through or not? just that little group of people in New York at the examination. All right. Years ago, they tried to change the name of the CPA to a cognitor. You ever heard that?
A what?
Cognitor.
Okay. Oh, no, I wasn't aware of that.
And this was in the late 70s. And they decided cognitor sounds really sexy because the CPA is just a credential for, you know, U.S. And if we want to go international, we're going to have to now change it from a CPA to a cognitor. All right. Well, all right. It required the unanimous, it requires, you know, a unanimous vote by the members of the ICPA. It was unanimously turned down. No one wanted to call themselves a cognitor, all right? They wanted to be a CPA, all right? Now, they're passing this through, and the only ones voting on it is them. No one. They did a study. Do you know 72% of people don't know what the evolution is? 72% don't know. And I am trying to, you know, I don't know how much I can do, but I think I'm concerned about the profession. That unless they recognize the problems, and I'm saying
I can't speak to most of that. I will. I'll just disclose that I was on the CPA Evolution Curriculum Committee related to the BAR, the Business Business Analysis and Reporting. I think it's the right. Oh, hopefully that's the right acronym. Otherwise, I'm embarrassing myself if I can't get back. But it was mainly. It was mainly of what do the universities need to include in their curriculum to make the future CPAs, you know, ready with the tools that they need. So there's a lot of data analytics and it's a lot of the skills that are needed to be functioning ready. So from I can't really speak to the political situation of behind the scenes of the
Universities don't want anybody to dictate to them what their curriculum should be.
Oh, well, and it wasn't a dictation. It was, here's an example. And so it was a model, an example. And so, I mean, the committee was in no position to be able to dictate anything. But what it did do is provide a lot of resources and tools. Because here's the tricky part is, you know, to retool, to be able to keep up with everything I talked about on the innovation side, to be able to make it so you can analyze data, means you have to actually understand all these things behind the scenes and be able to come out of school and analyze the data. I mean, that means hitting the ground running. That's hard to do.
Such as digital analytics, right?
Yeah. And so, accounting is still very much an apprenticeship-based system. And a lot of students are learning, when they get out of school, they're learning how to actually do their job by on-the-job training, a very apprenticeship system. And so if we're automating a lot of those early level tasks, how do we make somebody so they're actually capable of doing their job right out of school? And so that was the kind of the directive to the task force that I was on of what are those skills that they need and what
they do need them.
Ready.
I agree with you, but all right, putting this through to start January 1st, 2024, that's just around the corner. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we agree that all the schools have to hire people to have the skills to teach this stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. And why does it have to be in it? Like 2024 is just around the corner. I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, let's ram this through and, let's do it right. And let's like turn people. First of all, people don't like change.
Right. I'm aware. So I'm in the business of selling change.
you sell change? You sell bitcoins? Or no, I'm just kidding.
No. I actually do a lot of cryptocurrency accounting, though. But I'm in the business of change. Like, if you think about it, the standards are changing. That means, you know, people are having to deal with the change management related to that. I work at auditing company. Like, that's change. That's fundamentally changing things.
You deal with all these people in the field, accounting, at the colleges? And train them for change by January 1st.
Yeah. I can only speak to my personal experience, but I've been at Rice for 6 or 7 years since the relaunch of their program. You know, we've been teaching data analytics, and I personally have been teaching the data analytics since the relaunch of that program. And last year or the year before, we actually split my one class into three classes because the firms needed it. And MindBridge, the company I happen to work for, also gives their software to the universities to train and has training modules for the universities. And honestly, our competitors do the same, and all the other major data analytics packages do the same thing. So there's resources at the university levels Now, it's hard to train the professors that don't work in the space on a regular basis. That's why they're going to kind of people like me to bring in some external expertise. But all the software vendors also do train the trainers and build out model like examples and curriculum. So it's what the profession needs to be able to survive, to be able to move into that space in the first place. And it's what makes us more attractive as a profession, because we're not making staff stuff envelopes. Like that's just crazy. So, you know, at some point it has to change. You know, I really don't have an opinion on if 1/1/24 is too soon or not.
Oh, gee, I think so. But
at some point it's got to change, and mainly because the skills that we're testing. So I'll tell you that I failed the tax section my first try. I was really busy at work, did not have time to study. I actually tried to take tax at a time when I had less busy time and take audit when I was super busy, because I'm an auditor. I should hopefully be able to take audit without studying too much. Well, my busy season flipped on me and I, you know, kind of was stuck. So you probably don't want to hear this, but I did a very minimal job studying on the tax side. It was probably embarrassing, but I was like, you know what? It's scheduled. Let me just show up and see how I do. 74. And I was like,
That hurts, right?
It really hurt. It really, really hurt. And here's the thing. I caught the same question of how much passive loss. So I did not study thresholds. I didn't do it because I just thought, why would they test thresholds? Oh. They're going to test concepts. That's how you test. And I caught that I had the same question like 3 or 4 times related to how much passive loss can you deduct against active income kind of concept, like a passive loss concept. And I did not know the answer. I did not know what the threshold was. But I knew that I was seeing the same question every time. So I just answered a different number every single time, because that's what you do to hedge your bets. And had I known that one question answer, I would have passed. But I didn't know a threshold, and that's the pink point that made me fail. I'm sorry, that doesn't mean that the old exam was a good job.
You think that was it?
I failed a lot of other things. I clearly didn't get enough questions.
Well, right. Do you remember the weaker areas you got on the diagnostic?
No, because I just knew all I needed was one more or a couple more points. And honestly, when I was taking the exam, I knew when I was doing concept related things, I was doing well. I was like, I understand the question. I'm seeing answers that are reflective of what I'm thinking. I'm probably doing okay. When it came to anything related to a threshold, because I knew I didn't study it. And I looked at it, I was like, I have no idea what the threshold is. Why would I know what the threshold is? That's something I can look up every year. They change every year.
That's right.
Why would I test on a threshold? And so to me, the old exam was broken anyway. And so while I realized change is hard for everybody, it's not like the old thing was perfect. And so, and to me, how did that make me a better professional or not? If I could remember a threshold versus having my little, you know, the plastic cards they give you every year and looking it up or Googling it. I mean, so I hear your point, Phil, but I kind of come from a different perspective on it of, we're not teaching our students what they need to know to be successful.
I agree with you, and that's the problem.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad we agree in a heated voice.
I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I think you have to know all this digital analytics. You have to know cloud accounting. You have to know all this stuff. Artificial intelligence will be. Now, the problem is, though, they have to first find professors, all right, who know this stuff, and not... The smaller schools have those people, all right? But the smaller schools are not going to take a different CPA exam, all right, than the larger schools. That's all I'm saying, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, that's always the concern is resource capacity and all those different things. It's age-old tale.
Danielle, I enjoyed having you on, all right?
It's been great to be here.
You are not nerdy. I don't care what you say, all right?
It's because I didn't wear the right glasses. I wore too cool of the glasses, not my really nerdy, thick-rimmed glasses.
You want to go run and put them on?
I mean, no, it's okay.
I like those glasses. And
oh, thank you.
I'm sure you look good in the dark frames, too. You know what? It all makes you, you smile. You smile. That's good. I mean, when I talk to a person, they look like, you know, if they smile, their face would crack. But no, you.
Well, but see, here's the thing: is that this stuff is fun. And honestly, when you do work as an expert witness, you kind of learn that when people, you know, have tough conversations, you're not attacking each other. You're just you're kind of making your points of view known, and it's kind of the world I live in, and it's kind of a fun place where you're always challenged and your brain is always working, and that's what I love about it.
And would you agree that if you're an expert witness, you can't get too emotional?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, if you internalize it, because here's the thing, it's all a game. And so, you know, I've had one where somebody attacked me pretty heavily on the stand. And then, and of course, I was fine. And then afterwards, pretty much gave me their business card and pretty much said they'd be calling me in the future because I withstood the attack so well that they want to use me in the future. So there's a lot of stuff when you get into some of the different nuances of professions that things become a little bit more games, and you just can't internalize the stress and kind of just, again, I really do love the nerdy little things in life and derive a lot of joy out of it. So
hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, you like going to work every day?
Yeah, so that's, I totally do.
One thing. Yeah, hey, I can see that because when I said that, you started smiling.
Yeah. I got to figure out, what do I get to do today? What do I get to nerd out on autoregressive models? Like, this is great.
Can I tell you something? I really like you.
I like you too, Bill.
Yeah, I know. You're such a nice person. By the way, for those who are requesting pictures of her children, forget it. She's not going to show you that.
No, one you will not get. But if you need help rolling out a university program, you know, that's something I can help with.
Yes. No pictures of my children. You know, and actually, you can find Danielle. She is on LinkedIn, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Is that the best place to find you?
Yeah, that's a great place. Yeah.
And her last name is, Danielle Cheek. Just remember Cheek. Okay, Cheek. All right, and she fooled me. What did you say that was? It was
it was a scar apparently on whoever came
over. Right. Okay, you're funny too. All right.
Oh well, I'm glad you think so. Again, my husband doesn't think I'm funny, but I'm good at dad jokes and stupid accounting jokes.
How long have you been married now? How many years you married?
Oh, 11 years.
Oh, after a while, you don't laugh. It's different. The honeymoon period is over. It really is. But anyway, I think you're funny. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
And by the way, I want to wish you happy holidays.
Thank you.
New year. And I wish you good health, you and your family. All right. And may next year, the heck with this COVID anymore. I'm tired of this stuff, you know?
All right. For sure.
You think we'll go back to normal? I don't know.
Well, I don't think there is a new. I don't think there is a new normal.
It's a new normal.
Yeah, whatever new normal is. We'll eventually get to new normal because by definition, we'll get there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, Danielle, have a very nice holiday. Okay.
You too.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.